The eyes of the world, the eyes of the populations of the world are on you, and we have your numbers.
That lingering sense of please remains, and we'll see what comes next.
We need to make sure that what sits there on a piece of paper is actually going to turn into tangible, actionable projects on the ground that are going to make a difference to people's lives.
Hello, you're listening to Bloomberg Westminster, your daily guide to British politics. I'm Caroline Hepke.
Good afternoon, I'm Ewan Potts. Coming up on Bloomberg Westminster today, we'll be speaking to Conservative MP Harriet Baldwin and Bloomberg opinion columnist Therese Raphael.
But first, Boris Johnson faces Prime Minister's questions after a group of MPs elected in 2019 and dubbed the pork pie plotters gathered yesterday to discuss whether they should move against their Prime Minister. The Telegraph now reports that a further 11 Tory MPs have submitted letters of no confidence this morning.
Well, under Conservative Party rules, a no-confidence vote will be triggered if 54 MPs send letters to the 1922 committee. But at the moment, despite all the speculation, 1922 Chairman Graham Bradley is the only man who truly knows the number we're at.
Well, the fresh fury comes after an interview yesterday in which the Prime Minister doubled down on the excuse that nobody told him attending one of the Downing Street parties during lockdown was against the rules. Several MPs said that the excuse was barely credible. After all, Johnson was in charge of making and explaining the rules.
Well, former Downing Street Press Secretary Alistair Campbell's weighed in, saying that Britain's reputation has been dragged through the mud.
These MPs are only thinking about their own interests now. They're thinking about, will it help me to stay as an MP if he stays or goes? He is the worst Prime Minister we've ever had, and he's got to go.
Well, joining us now is Harriet Baldwin, Conservative MP for West Worcestershire. Harriet, welcome to the programme. Thank you so much for being with us. Will you be submitting as an MP a letter to the 1922 committee in favour of a no-confidence vote in the Prime Minister?
What I want to see is this report that a very senior civil servant is preparing, Sue Gray, which is apparently going to come out quite soon. I'm expecting it to come out probably next week. And that will go through the facts. So I'm sure all your listeners would appreciate that from the point of view of being a backbench Conservative MP, we have the same amount of information as you do, because this is all coming out through leaks to the media from Boris Johnson's previous senior advisor, Dominic Cummings. And so we are not ourselves privy to any more information about what was happening in Downing Street during 2020, as you are. But what we do want to see is we want to see a clear setting out of the facts, the background, what happened at the moment. As you know from last week's Prime Minister's questions, the Prime Minister said that he attended an event on May the 20th for 25 minutes in his garden.
Various MPs are on record saying that the excuse is not credible, that he gave to whether or not he, well, the fact that he attended a party but didn't think of it as such. Should the Prime Minister resign?
Well, as I said, I think very many of us are looking forward to seeing clearly what the facts are about this situation. As you know, the rules are in our party that 15% of members can submit letters of no confidence. That triggers a vote of no confidence in the Prime Minister. And were he to survive that, which seems highly likely, then he would be in post for another year before they were able to hold another vote of no confidence in him. I think what members are looking for is a clear outline of what happened, when, and who knew what when, and that we should get from Sue Gray's report next week.
Hopefully we'll get that. What would it take from Sue Gray's report for you to put in a letter asking for Boris Johnson to go? What's the red line for you?
Well, I think one of the things that people are very clear about is that it is not acceptable for a minister to say things that are untrue to Parliament. And I think that is something that has been respected throughout the centuries. And, that would be, I think, for many people, their red line.
Okay, that statement took some questioning, though, from reporters to extract from the Deputy Prime Minister, Dominic Raab, although it's come sort of more in a free-flowing way from him yesterday, at least. How many MPs do you think at the moment are against the Prime Minister? Because it's not simply one event. It is a whole series, potentially, of events, of gatherings, of parties at Number 10. It's very hard to avoid the Prime Minister receiving some of the blame and some of the view amongst the public that the rules were said one thing and he did something different. How many right now of your colleagues are against him?
Yeah, I think the public, you know, deserve to see the full facts, as indeed do we as backbench MPs, because, you know, it is a very strange situation, isn't it, where as
but
Prime
it's
Minister
surely not
live
credible
above the
for,
shop
for...
in the office and you have a back garden.
But it's not credible to say that he didn't realise he was at a party when he was at one, surely. I mean, that's the thing that has tipped things, and it's surely also the thing that has infuriated some MPs that he went out and did the interview yesterday and gave that excuse again.
Yeah, he said last week, didn't he, that he attended from 6 to 6.25. He, in retrospect, thinks it would have been better if he'd asked everyone to go back inside where they were working, indoors at their, in their offices. You know, this is, it is a strange situation where your workplace and your home and your garden are all sort of smooshed into one thing, and no one questions the fact that these were essential workers, you know, working extremely hard to make sure that the country coped with the pandemic that hit us and hit so many countries around the world. So I think, you know, the best we can do is to make sure that we understand the full facts, exactly what the situation was. And I think we will get that from Sue Gray's report, which I understand is imminent. You asked about how many people you think are unhappy enough to have put in a letter. And clearly, at this point, it's shy of 54. So it's somewhat less than that.
What's the mood in the Malverns? Have you been out canvassing opinion in Worcestershire about what people think about how the Prime Minister's behaved?
Yes, of course. And I think all colleagues have received a reasonably high amount of inbound correspondence on this, you know, because we do appreciate that not only were we having to observe very tough rules, but our constituents were having to observe very tough rules. And it was a time when we weren't able to see our loved ones. Mm-hmm. It was a time when we weren't able to see people in hospital. It was a time when we weren't able to see, you know, our nearest and dearest indoors, and it was very, very difficult for people. And so, understandably, people are, you know, really expressing a lot of anger about this ex post revelation.
When you say a reasonably high level of inbound correspondence, you mean a lot of letters.
Well, to give your listeners a sort of comparison in terms of the top 10 things that I've received correspondence from my constituents about over the nearly 12 years that I've been a Member of Parliament for West Worcestershire, the highest number by far was when Dominic Cummings went to Barnard Castle.
Okay. The Prime Minister, it's expected, is going to also announce the lifting of COVID-19 restrictions in England later today, at least according to the FT, other reports. He's tearing up the idea that the government is following the science here, isn't he? This is a move so strategic that it's absolutely clear.
Well, actually, the regulations that were voted on just before Christmas, which were to implement Plan B, they expire on the 26th of January. So clearly the government does need to come to a decision as to whether or not they want to extend Plan B or lift Plan B. Mm. And I understand that's what this afternoon's statement is about. I'm a member of the COVID recovery group. I think that the Prime Minister actually made a very good decision over Christmas not to shut down the economy in over Christmas and New Year, and allowing us to enjoy a better Christmas than the year before. I think that was the right call. I think as we move from a situation where, thanks to the amazing vaccinations, the amazing implementation of the booster program in the UK, that we can live alongside classified this disease as an endemic disease, I think it makes sense for the Prime Minister to have come to the decision that these regulations on the 26th of January should expire.
Today, why today, though? And I mean, that's a crucial issue. Why now?
Well, he has to make the decision in advance of us being asked to vote on extending things. So it was either going to be today or Monday. So those you know, not many MPs are around tomorrow because it's a one-line whip. So it was always going to be today or Monday.
On the isolation period, we've cut that from 10 to 7 to 5 days. The reports the government might like to scrap it altogether in March. What do you think of that idea?
Well, again, as a member of the COVID recovery group, you know, what we're trying to help the government do is come to the decisions that reflect the fact that thanks to these vaccinations, thanks to the new treatments, thanks to the amazing rollout of the booster program, you know, the UK is very much ahead of the curve in terms of being able to live alongside this virus without the NHS being overwhelmed. And I think what we would like to see is a moment where we effectively announce that, you know, we've done it and that this will continue to be a respiratory illness alongside the other respiratory illnesses in society, you know, a nasty one, but certainly one where we should do the same as we would do if we had another nasty respiratory illness, which is stay at home until we feel better.
We're joined by Bloomberg's James Walcock. Normally, when a leader is challenged, it comes from a cabinet minister or from a sort of ideological faction within a party. What makes this rebellion interesting is that it's coming from some of the youngest MPs in Parliament. Tell us more about whether Boris Johnson is going to stay or go.
So, I mean, just like you said, I mean, if you look back to the past, Michael Heseltine, I mean, Michael Gove with Boris Johnson, even Boris Johnson himself, there's all sorts of skullduggery that happens, especially in the Conservative Party, well known for deposing leaders. What was interesting is what really seems to have kicked off all the speculation this morning is it came from MPs who, many of whom, haven't even been in Parliament for 2 years. Of Politico put out this very interesting stat this morning that I came up looked at, which is the average age of the plotters we know at this kind of 2019
the
gathering.
Pork pie plotters.
I knew you'd say that. I mean, I'm near lunch. Good, I couldn't possibly say. they all met yesterday, 20 of them reportedly, and they did a secret ballot of if they would support Johnson. And obviously, the majority apparently said they wouldn't, and that's how we ended up with these headlines today. And many of them are in the Red Wall, many of them first-time MPs. And I went back to when they got elected back in December 2019, and Johnson told these 170 MPs then they have 18 months to repay the first-time Tory voters who helped them smash Labour. Mm. That was the tone he set. Obviously, the pandemic happened and things have changed in those first 18 months, but these are people who are very, very aware that if they aren't electorally successful, Labour will take their seats back. And so there are different sort of things driving them than maybe would drive normal MPs.
And yet it is also quite surprising for a number of reasons, not least because Boris Johnson really was responsible for them winning their seats in the Red Wall. You know, those seats in the north of England which went Tory. They weren't voting because they voted Tory before. They voted because Boris Johnson was bringing a different sort of conservatism. So you would think they would have more loyalty than perhaps you know some of the older Conservative MPs. It's a little odd, isn't it?
It is, although it's important to stress, right, that it's 20 MPs, there were 107 who were elected in that cohort. So just like your guest earlier, who is still waiting for Sue Gray, as many Conservative MPs are, this is only a sort of a fraction. But I'd put out two different things in response to that, Ewan. One is this idea of like party management. In any party, like a business, like any organisation, you need to have career ladders and chains. Johnson's been... He had a very static cabinet, let's put it that way. You know, over the pandemic, you've had very little movement in government. So if you're an ambitious MP who's just joined the parliament, who wants to make your mark on parliament, say Dehenna Davidson, who actually is well known on TV, but, you know, isn't a member of government as yet. She's been on GB News, for example. How do you make a mark? And you see sort of fellow MPs during the Brexit debates, people like Steve Baker say, the way you do it is by rebelling against the government. So in some ways, you have an example set of the best way to do it is to be a maverick, to rebel against the government, to get your name known out of there. Mm. And then also you're like, well, how else do I sort of get in government at all without deposing the current? So that the incentives that are in place in terms of party management, as well as fears around polling, might have encouraged this.
Yeah, and it's fractions and fractions, right? It's, there are 360 Tory MPs now, so 107 are the new cohort, and then it's only 20 that met. So, you know, it's still difficult to know exactly what the feeling is within the parliamentary party. What are we watching then? PMQs. Mm-hmm. And then what?
And then it's, we all wait for Sue Gray. I mean, where's Godot when you have Sue Gray on the line? And after that, we have May council elections. We have fears around energy prices coming up in April. Johnson wasn't set for an easy first half of the year before this. The question now is there anything he can do to turn it around?
Lovely stuff. Thanks so much. Bloomberg's James Walcott joining us with the latest from Westminster. Thanks, James.
Well, we can't get off the subject that easily, though, can we? Bloomberg opinion columnist Therese Raphael joins us now. Therese, so I suppose the fundamental question, will Johnson stay or go? I think his hair said it all from the interview yesterday. Don't you? It was flat.
It was a mess.
The man looked exhausted. He's under pressure.
Yeah, I mean, we started the year kind of wondering, well, would Boris Johnson last the year? You know, would he, could he turn it around? And now we just don't know whether he'll last the week. And I think right now it's just on a knife edge. It's too hard to say. I think it depends on lots of things. You know, not least how he performs in Prime Minister's questions, but of course the Sue Gray report and what she says and. You know, especially the question around that May 20th party, whether whether he knew that it was going to be a party, and you know, he says, "Oh, nobody told me," which really stretches all credulity. You know, since he did walk out and spend 25 minutes talking to dozens of people, sat around trestle tables with canopies and drinks. You know, so I think that's just gone down really badly. That was his statement to Beth Rigby on Sky News yesterday. But, you know, beyond that, let's just say, for argument's sake, that those 54 letters are put in and there is a confidence vote. I mean, in 2018, Theresa May survived her confidence vote and very comfortably. Now, the conditions, I think, are very different for Boris Johnson. Back then, you know, both the right and, well, let's say the Brexiter and the Remainer sides of the party, neither had a very strong interest in pushing her out because the potential of, you know, the wrong candidate replacing her and pushing the Brexit issue, whichever way you stood toward the other direction was quite strong. So she was sort of kept in power then, you know, as the lowest common denominator. I think now the question is, if the perception is that Boris Johnson is damaging the Tory party, is a liability, is going to make it, you know, hard for them, you know, to win local council elections in May, but you know, more than that, to win a future election, then you could have all sides of the party, and this is a party of a number of factions, you know, united and in getting rid of him. And I think there was a pretty worrying for Boris Johnson Channel 4 poll out today, you know, showing Labour up 48-37 for the Tories in those red wall seats. So I think, and Rishi Sunak is one of the contenders, is quite popular in that area as well. So I think all of those will be worrying signs for Johnson.
Therese, I wonder if there's a danger, if there's a danger here that for those red wall conservatives, that they ditch a somewhat spendthrift prime minister, somebody who's promised to spend a lot of money, at least in the election, and replace him with somebody who perhaps is much more of a fiscal conservative.
I mean, I think that is a huge danger, and it actually, you know, points to the problem the party will have if it decides to get rid of Johnson, and that he knitted together this coalition of northern voters who, you know, want more spending, are not very bothered by taxes going up, and you know, as James said, they have a very short, short amount of time. The new MPs who are elected in these constituencies to show that they can deliver on those campaign promises, and they are united with the traditional Tories that wanted to see Singapore on the Thames, wanted Brexit to deliver a low tax, low regulatory environment, and are unhappy that so far, you know, those dividends haven't you know, aren't apparent. You get rid of Johnson, and who is going to, you know, never mind the difficulty with the cost of living, you know, crisis, with the additional cost for Brexit, with inflation at its highest levels in 30 years, never mind the difficulty in you know, trying to deliver you know, real benefits to those people. But, you know, how do you square the demands of both sides of the parties? It's going to be very difficult. Arguably, Johnson was the person who could at least, you know, rhetorically keep things united, whether, you know, Rishi Sunak, who's made it very clear he's a low-tax Tory, can do that is, you know, that's a big risk.
And what does all of this mean for Labour, who are ahead in the polls? And of course, Keir Starmer, the lawyer that he is, has a real opportunity here in some ways. And he demonstrated that in last week's or in the previous PMQs, you know, where he was trying to pin the Prime Minister down in terms of having lied or not. What does all of this mean for Labour's chances now?
Right. I mean, you know, half a year ago, we would have said Keir Starmer just really looked like he wasn't cutting through at all, that he had no presence as a leader. You mentioned that last PMQs. That was sort of the moment where he, you know, was both, you know, the clinical, prosecutorial, you know, challenger to Boris Johnson that, you know, people expect him to be, but he also really pressed all the political buttons. And, we also have had quite an effective reshuffle of his team, so his front bench looks a lot more serious. And the question is really, can he build on that now? I mean, clearly the polls are looking much better for Starmer, and he has really attacked Johnson on this question of competence and character. I think the next step for Labour is to explain to voters what it really stands for. And there's, you know, a lot of the old Corbynite manifesto still stands, and Labour hasn't really managed to kind of do that. So, it's, you know, if Johnson were to go and you get a Rishi Sunak, for example, in his place, would these attacks still cut through in the same way, or would Labour slip right back down?
And Therese, just briefly, it's looking like we could get an announcement on the lifting of the COVID restrictions in England later today.
Yeah, I mean, this is a huge moment where you would have Britain becoming, you know, pretty much the first country that says we have now declared an end to restrictions. We have learned to live with the virus. We have measures in place from vaccines to treatments. Certain masking conventions, I think, will be kept in place. And yet, you know, that is likely to just be drowned out by the political drama. But it is an important moment. It is, you know, for all of the you know, mistakes that were made in the first couple of waves of the pandemic, it's a moment you kind of expect Boris Johnson to be able to claim some credit for. But, you know, really, he's got other things on his mind right now. I'm not sure that he will get much credit for it.
Bloomberg Westminster. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.